You're listening to DraftKings Network.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, welcome to the Hockey Show. My name is Roy Bellamy. That's David Jork of the Hockey News. Coming up today, we have Sarah Sivian from the Bleacher Report. We're going to talk about the entire landscape of the playoffs here in the second round. But first, we're going to talk about the Boston Bruins series that the Panthers are currently enshrined in. They've already played two games, and they were drastically different, Dave.
Yeah, pretty different. Each team kind of coming away with one that they're happy with. Fun series, though, especially the way Game 2 round up. I mean, obviously, you know, Panthers winning was nice, but all that fighting and fun, and we're going to get to that soon. But it's been a fun series. It's been kind of what we expected. And I would love to see it go deep. I'd love to see a 6 or 7 game series. It looks like we're going that way, but so far, some great playoff hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with Game 1. The Panthers lost 5-1 against the Bruins, and they came out well. It was a clean start. It was a fast start for them for the first half of the first period. And then it seems like the Bruins got their sea legs and dominated from there on out.
Yeah, it was interesting because Boston just, you know, less than 2 days before had just played their Game 7 against Toronto. So, you know, big emotional win. They did it at home. Then they had to travel. I mean, obviously, we saw the Panthers do it last year to where they had to win a Game 7. Then they had to start another series right away. And then what did they do? They went to Boston and they went to Toronto, straight from Boston and 1-2 straight. So it's certainly doable when you get that playoff momentum. But, yeah, it was a big game for Boston. Matthew Tkachuk scored first for the Panthers, got the ball rolling for them. But I think it was like a minute later that Boston tied the game, and it just kind of felt like slowly but surely they got that nice goal in the final minute of the second period that I thought was huge for them, just because it really gave them that big momentum boost, that emotional lift heading into the locker room, going into what was probably going to be the toughest period of the game. And they just ran away with it. A great game, by the way, by Jeremy Swayman in Game 1. Mm-hmm. He had been lights out to that point and continued it then. So it was a fun Game 1, not so much for the Panthers, Roy, but, you know, again, it gave them something to build on.
Gave him something to build on. Yeah, absolutely. Brandon Carlo came in late.
That was a cool story, by the way. He got a lot of attention after the game, but I didn't mean to cut you off there. I think you were going to go with it. But I mean, can you imagine? I mean, we've both kind of been there. We've been through the whole fatherhood thing.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having to go through all that and then sandwich it between two plane flights and going out and playing a hockey game? Mm. Brandon Montour did it last year during the final.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, having that feeling, winning Game 7, having a kid, spending as much time as you can with this new child, who's a boy. His name is Crew, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was the CCC were the initials.
Triple C.
Triple C.
And then having to board the flight and missing morning skate, but being able to make the game and then scoring. Now, I mean, that has to be a tremendous feeling.
God, that's so cool.
Yeah. The Panthers made a lineup change to start Game 2. Paul Maurice said that it was a change at the end of Game 5. The Tampa series, they saw Matthew Tkachuk move up to the first line.
Yes.
And Sam Reinhart moving down to the second line. It seemed like it worked at the end of Game 5, but for the first four periods of the series, did not work for them.
No, well, what happened was back in the Tampa series, when Tampa was down 3-1, they needed to do whatever they could to stay in that series. They put Brandon Point, Steven Stamkos, and Nikita Kucherov on a line together, so Florida made a switch to try to match up with that. Obviously, as you said, it worked well in that game. I think 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, or whatever it was in the deciding game against Tampa. So you wanted to keep that together. Hey, it looked pretty good. Let's see how it looks against Boston. Florida goes out in Game 1 against Boston. 11 minutes through the second period, they've got a 1-0 lead. So something, you know, was there a little bit. They kept with it. But Paul Maurice, you know, once they got into Game 2 and they saw things still weren't going Florida's way, he switched it back to what we saw through most of the Tampa series after Sam Bennett got hurt in Game 2. And it really seemed to click things back into shape for Florida, because once you put those lines together, Vladimir Tarasenko had gone four games without a shot on goal. And then you put him back on that top line with Barkov and Reinhart, and all of a sudden he gets three or four shots in the last game alone. So it really sparked the entire lineup, Roy. And as you saw, the Panthers started scoring and then just ran with it.
Before we go into game two, let's talk about the defense and puck handling. The Panthers did not do well in either. Aaron Ekblad did not have a good game at all.
No, that was very uncharacteristic to see from Ekblad. He struggled a lot in game one. A couple of pretty bad turnovers. One of the Boston goals he was the one screening Bob. I think it was the Carlo goal that he was screening Bob.
Yeah.
Two of the goals came off of Ekblad turnovers in the Panthers' end. As I said, very un-Ekblad-like game because he's always lights out. You know, he's a great defenseman first. But he, like many of the Panthers, did bounce back in game two, but very unlike him.
Plus the breakaway by Justin Brazeau, that was not a good look seeing Aaron Ekblad chase him down.
No. And again, you never want to see it because Ekblad's one of your top pairing guys, right? Him and Forsling are on the ice more than any other defenseman. So to see him kind of have that kind of a rough night, it almost puts the team in a bit of an awkward spot because you're used to certain guys kind of being your anchors, right? That you can rely on, okay, I'm going to get X, Y, and Z from these guys. And when that starts to not happen, it can throw everybody in for a little bit of a loop. And I wonder if that's a little bit of what we saw in game two, or in game one, rather.
Well, the good news is game two is a completely different situation, especially by the defensive units, both offensively and defensively. They played much, much better. The defense actually led the way in setting up goals in game two.
Yeah. Was it Gus Forsling had a monster goal?
Yeah.
But again, it's been the story of the season, or this Panthers team, not just this season, but the last couple of seasons, is their defense fuels their offense. I mean, it's such a five-man game that they play. But whether it's Aaron Ekblad, whether it's Brendan Montour, whether it's Gus Forsling, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you've got guys that can jump into the play and contribute, and the Panthers definitely rely on that.
Game two didn't start that well because, again, that was the fourth period of that new lineup. They came out slow, and they gave up the first goal of the game. And that's when Paul Maurice decided, you know what, enough of this. Let's put the lines in the blender. And that's when Alexander Barkov took over.
Oh, my God. If anything in that game, too, was holy shit, what a night from Alex Barkov. And really, it's three games in a row now that Barkov has been pretty lights out. But it's amazing when that man takes a game over, when that man starts, when he gets that, like, Ovechkin, McDavid-type alpha mindset. I'm trying to remember who I was talking about this recently, but somebody was asking me, like, is Sasha Barkov still an underrated player? And the reason I think he even has that moniker, that idea surrounding
him, it's where he plays his games.
Well, it's because when you watch him play, like, you see, like, this guy could be, like, a 60-goal scorer if he wanted to be. This guy could take over every game if he just stopped focusing so much on defense and he just was, like, an offensive-minded guy. Like, he could be a superstar in this league if he did that, but that's not who he is. He's a Bergeron. He's a Selke guy, and that's his game, which is great. But I think that could be maybe why people consider him as an underrated guy, just because you could tell that there could be so much more if he pushed that part of his game, but that's not who he is.
So many goals that Alexander Barkov has just prevented.
Yes.
Just by back-checking.
It's not sexy, but it's very important.
Absolutely, is absolutely very important. Let's talk about the Steven Lawrence goal. That was good forechecking by the fourth line. Calipozzo forced a turnover. I mean, Boston was clearly ready to go in transition, go the other way, but it was hilarious to me to see Steven Lawrence that wide open in front of the crease as basically all the Boston Bruins were facing facing Sergei Bobrovsky trying to go back the other way.
Well, that's just Panthers hockey. They forced a turnover. It totally threw Boston's exit out of whack. Their defensemen were out of position. But credit to Steven Lorenz, that's not easy to do what he did. Like, Brendan Montour served him up a perfect softball pitch of a wrist shot. Mm-hmm. It was a great, great placement by Brendan Montour. But it's still really hard. He had to choke up on his stick in the moment, get his blade on it, tip it just enough to keep it under the barb, going in the net. Steven Lorenz has got some skill. Like,
yeah.
It's the second big goal he scored in this playoffs. And that fourth line, Roy, I mean, of all the inconsistencies that we saw in the first four periods of the Boston series, the fourth line really carried the team at times. That was the energy.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to see Ryan Lomberg get back in the lineup now.
Yeah. Ryan Lomberg's not only that, but if Sam Bennett comes back, well, when Sam Bennett comes back, maybe game three, we'll see. That game is tonight. But when Sam Bennett comes back and that domino effect comes, because then Anton Lundell goes to the third line, Kevin Stenlund goes back to the fourth line. So who's going off the fourth line? Ryan Lomberg can't get on the fourth line with Bennett out of the lineup. So now that Bennett comes back, it's that much harder. Because who's going to come out? Is it going to be Lorenz? Because he's been playing great. He's the center, so maybe he comes out. But I don't know. Does Ekposo come out and Lorenz slide to the wing?
It can't be Cousins because that's Lomberg's off wing.
No, Cousins is like the guy who's probably not going to because he's not a fourth liner. Cousins, you know, you're a little surprised to see him in the top six at times.
There's no room in the lineup.
He was great on that line with Bennett and Tkachuk last year in the playoffs, but that's the thing. That's the luxury of where Florida is right now. They're so deep. They're like five lines and four deep pairings deep right now. It's such a luxury for them.
Yeah, the Panthers looked like they were just throwing pucks on net a lot more and a lot more screens in front of Swayman, and then eventually the Bruins had to take Swayman out and put Linus Allmark in, and the Panthers ended up winning that one 6-1 to split the series. We got 2.5 minutes left. We got to hurry up and talk about what happened in the third period. 12 misconducts and a fight between Matt Tkachuk and David Pastrnak.
Where do we start? I guess you got to start with the fight, just because like it's not often you see superstars going at it. Tkachuk is one of those, you know, unicorn type superstars that will fight. David Pastrnak, I believe it was the second fight of his entire career. A credit to Pasta for getting pissed and, you know, be like, you know, I'm going to handle this myself. I'm not going to send somebody out there. I'm not going to send one of our, you know, agitators out there to deal with it. No, like him and Tkachuk met at center ice. Tkachuk won the fight, but I don't think, you know, anybody really cares in terms of the hockey sense of it. Like, there's a hockey code, right? There was a great article in The Athletic about it that I was reading last night. They both kind of answered the bell. It was really cool to see, and the way that the game was going. And now I'm just excited to see where it leads in Game 3, Roy, just because you don't see that kind of stuff so often, and Boston was pissed.
Yeah, it seems like the shift before, they were discussing, hey, listen, we're going to fight each other, right?
Yes.
And that's pretty much what's going to happen. And then Pasta went to the bench and told Jim Montgomery, hey, I'm going to fight.
I'm going to fight. Is that cool?
Yeah, is that cool?
Do you mind, coach?
And like, hey, we're not going to win this game, so hey, do what you want to do. Just don't get injured. And they went right back out there, and Matt Tkachuk proceeded to pummel David Pastrnak.
Yes.
It landed a right hand that, as Pastrnak was already falling, knocked his helmet backwards and then knocked him backwards. And somehow, some way, Pastrnak ended up on top of Matt Tkachuk, on top of his back as he slid off and then started and gave a couple of punches.
Remember those old Rock'em Sock'em robots?
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of when I saw Pasta's helmet go popping off like that. I just reminded me of those Rock'em Sock'em.
Yeah, Rock'em Sock'em robots. That's exactly what he looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the third period was taken to the gutter by the Boston Bruins, and the Panthers responded in kind and ended up pretty much coming up on top physically and on the scoreboard. So, yeah, good night for the Panthers as the series is now split.
Yes,
at one piece. Best of five. Well, listen, we're going up to Boston. Well,
They went 3-1 in Boston in last year's playoff series.
Yeah. Yeah. Warriors.
They don't mind it.
We got Sarah Sivian coming up next. We're going to talk about the entire landscape and possibly talk about the Tkachuk and Pasta fight again. All right, joining us now is Sarah Sivian of Bleacher Report. She is the NHL columnist there, and we are going to talk about hockey with a NHL columnist. The Toronto Maple Leafs have had their exit interviews with their executives today, and a interesting statement has come out, one that has apparently tickled the fancy of David Dvorak. Dave, what is that?
So Brad Treliven, the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, is giving their exit interviews. And Sarah, he just said, quote, "We need to find a way to do the hard, unsexy things longer, and they're not related to skill." I did not know what to make of that. Perhaps you can help me out a little bit, Sarah.
I think we've officially broken the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think they've said everything that they could possibly say. I was at the Game 7 where Sheldon Keefe said, "The other team sets up the Leafs to beat themselves," and that's when you know it's over. It's blow it up. It's done.
Oh, my God. I mean, seriously, we're having statements like this coming out of another bad postseason for the Maple Leafs. I mean, they made it out of the first round once in the last 5 years. They just can't. As a Bruin fan, that makes Sarah happy, but, I mean, they just can't get out of their own way. I mean, it's ridiculous, Sarah.
They can't. I don't know. You see the Mitch Marner scapegoat situation, but at the same time, you should change as much as possible. I think ousting Sheldon Keefe was the move. I know he had the classy video that everyone was running to say how classy he is. Classy doesn't win you the second round, barely wins you the first round. So they need a really good, like, hard-nosed coach, but not Mike Babcock.
No, actually, you kind of mentioned what I wanted to ask you about before we move on from this, and that was the Sheldon Keefe interview. I thought it was lovely. I thought the background was tranquil. I thought it was a perfect goodbye send-off to piss off everybody in Southern Ontario. What did you think when you saw that?
Yeah, I thought, oh my God, he's auditioning for his next job. If that was me, I'd probably just take the money and run. But yeah, what are right. you gonna do? I'm not. I don't have that coach mentality. He would be a great coach somewhere else, I think. I mean, it's just the Leafs. What do you even do? I don't know. He's probably relieved that this is over. Like, Jesus, can you imagine coaching that team?
Yeah,
I can't imagine running that team. What about Brendan Shanahan? Is this possibly his last year?
Doesn't look like it by the sounds of the press conference. Like, they're going to cling to him by they claw him away. Like, it's not happening. They're saying he's a champion. I'm like, I am not so sure about that after seeing the way these things have gone. But it just goes to show you that, like, it's so much harder to get rid of an owner, a president, etc., than it is any other position. So you go bottom up, you go Mitch Marner, the supporting cast of the Leafs, and then the head coach.
So Sarah, moving on to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
The actual teams are in it now.
Yeah, the teams that are still playing hockey, you know. But the Boston Bruins, Florida Panthers series, obviously Roy and I have been paying very close attention to that. I'm sure you are as well, being up in the Boston area. When you saw game two, the end of game two, when we saw Brandon Montour trolling Brad Marchand with the licking, when we saw David Pastrnak and Matthew Tkachuk dropping the gloves at center ice. I mean, is this like one of the best old-time hockey series that we can see right now? Because it's been amazingly entertaining for us.
Absolutely. This is what we live for. There's different drama, different tropes than last year, but last year's vibes brought into this year, I think, if you ask me. And I love any lopsided, like, game one, 5-1, game two, like any other direction. I feel like this is the most entertaining. Everyone's saying Dallas and the Avalanche are the most entertaining, but I really think this is the most entertaining of the playoffs, especially you got David Pastrnak dropping the gloves. I mean, who else could bring that out but Matthew Tkachuk?
Right.
How do you think the city's taking this series now that it's split?
Which city? Boston?
Boston, the city that you're currently living in. You see people over here with their hair on fire. What the hell is going on in Boston?
I think, oh God, the discourse has always been like the Bruins were on borrowed time and they weren't going to win this round. So I think game one was a bit of a tease. And then you're like, oh, finally, we're back down to earth. But it's just so interesting how menacingly the Bruins won game one. So you just, like, I just think game three, I mean, hottest take in the world. The next game is the most important one, but it really is going to define the series.
So after game two, a lot of the discourse or whatever on social media, a lot of hatred toward Matthew Tkachuk from Boston fans, calling him a rat, saying, you know, he was sucker punching Pasta. I don't know about all that. I thought it was a good hockey fight. I thought maybe Chucky took a little too far at the end. Maybe he threw an extra punch or two, but I mean,
so did Pasta.
Well, that's the thing, right? This is hockey. It's the playoffs. Everybody's crazy. I loved it, but is Matthew Tkachuk currently the most hated non-Boston hockey player out there, Sarah?
If he is, I don't get it. I think he's highly entertaining. I think he goads people into things and they accept. Like Pastrnak said himself, I can take a punch. Like, I can handle it. And I wanted to do that. I agreed to it. So I think that was a good, clean hockey fight. I agree with you guys. I think if he's not hated, he's not doing his job right.
I mean, you bring up a good point. Matthew Tkachuk does goad people into scrums a lot of time. And then Matthew Tkachuk skates away, like, kind of like the mischievous kid who like sets something on fire and then walks away laughing. Like, that seems to be the edge to his game, Sarah.
Absolutely. He draws penalties. If you look at any of the advanced analytics metrics at any point in the season, he's going to be up. Him and Brady are both up there with drawing penalties. And it's like, it's so effective. Like, the ratio of getting to drawing penalties that they have, like, they have nailed that. And it's just such a unique, it's not a relic of the olden days because he's not like, I know people will disagree and say that he is a dirty player, but they're just being biased. He's pretty clean. He isn't injuring people, you know, but he's scoring. Like, it's some way the olden days, but it's like the new version of the olden days. And I'm just so here. It's like quintessential hockey to me.
Yep. I'm here for it. Sarah, with this series, before we move on, I wanted to quickly ask you about the goaltending in Boston. It's because Swayman's been ridiculous. I mean, he's been amazing throughout the playoffs. He had one rough game in game two. I mean, two periods really that were rough. And Omar comes in. There's talk maybe, you know, Montgomery's going to make a change. I don't think he should. I think he should roll with Jeremy Swayman. But what's the situation? What's the chatter up in Boston? Do you think he's going to continue to roll with Swayman, or maybe we're going to start switching it up again?
I think you don't take your best player out of the game, which is why they went with him in game one, and then you saw what happened. I think he's had way too many good periods and good games to take him out. And then I think putting Ullmark in at the end of the last game is an indication that they're going to keep rolling with Swayman. I keep calling it Swaymark. Like, when we talk about
I mean, it is Swaymark. It literally is Swaymark. Those two are like two peas in a pod.
Yeah. I love the goalie.
They are. I mean, you look at Ullmark's metrics against the Panthers and you think there's a case to maybe put him in because he's been incredible, but you can't let two rough periods really deter you too much from what has been the consistently best player on the Bruins and one of the best goalies in the postseason right now. Like, the team has not been great around him more often than not. So you look at that, and I think, especially with putting Ullmark in at the end of game two, I feel like you're going back to him.
Finally, in this series, where do you see this one finishing?
I think the Panthers are going to win. I just think they've been the better team all year. The Bruins were really confident after game seven, and we were talking to Jim Montgomery, and he said, I've never seen them so confident in overtime. And that confidence carried over to game one, where they had like no business. And Brandon Carlo just had a baby. Like, he's popping out the baby. He's running on the private jet and he's scoring a goal. Like, they're kind of running on confident fumes, but the Panthers are the objective better team. But I don't know, like, did Bobrovsky get shaken in game one? Probably not, because of his game two response. But this is why game three is so important. Like, this is where the like fat is shaven off and you just see really who is the better team.
Oh, wow. He's over here renting out private jets. He's got diapers to buy, man. Got baby food to get. I mean, what's going on here?
He bought him a little with the goal.
Yeah.
Sarah, another team going right now in the Eastern Conference playoffs that you're familiar with is the Carolina Hurricanes. They lost last night. Again, in overtime, to the Rangers, and they are now down 3-0 in that series. Is their window closing? Is their championship window closing? Because this could be back-to-back years that they're ousted by sweep.
Well, contracts are going to start coming up. I mean, you got Rod Brindamore's contract up, but that's the position they always put themselves in with their management and front office. But you've got Aho's contract coming up, Teravainen's, Pesci's, Slavin's. Like, it's getting to the point where, yeah, you have to start questioning things. But I mean, when you look, these are such brutal losses because they're all basically by one goal. They're all by not scoring on the power play. And it's been, what are they, 0-15? Yeah, on the power play in this round. That's inexcusable, but you don't know why. Like, on one hand, the Rangers are so freaking good and their penalty kill has just been systemic. Like, it's been the absolute best penalty kill I've seen in a minute, but at the same time, you have to get through it 1 of 15 times, and that's how close these games are, and you're just not there. It's so concerning. Like, there's no shaking it off, if that makes sense. It feels like every game is bleeding into the next, instead of like 1-10 is nothing loss where you just shake it off. It's like, no, it is, but the bad vibes are bleeding.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this more on Carolina not playing well, or is it the Rangers being that dominant? Is it? It can't just be the penalty kill. Even, I mean, the penalty kill has been excellent, but it's got to be more than that for the Rangers, right? It's got to be Shesterkin.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a secret third thing, Igor Shesterkin. Not really a secret, but that they're getting out goalied. Of course they are, because you have to score on the power play against an all-class goalie like that. It's like a little bit of both, as it always is. People don't ever want to think that, though. They're like trying to blame their own team, or they're happy for the team that's winning. But at the end of the day, it's like a little bit of both things.
Moving over now to the Western Conference, Sarah. I've been thoroughly entertained so far. We're only two games in, but Colorado-Dallas, it's been a lot of fun. You saw a sit comeback in game one by the Avs. You saw Dallas take it to them in game two last night. I really hope this series goes seven. But when I watch this series, I see a team in Dallas who's got an amazing goaltender. They've got some solid defensive structure, and they can score. But then there's Colorado who can just blow you out of the building. It feels like one of the best series of the playoffs. But what's been your take on it so far?
Yeah, Colorado is one of the fastest hockey teams you'll ever see, and they are so confident that they can rely on like their third period. But I think at the end of the day, that's going to be what does them in. I mean, Captain Obvious, but the way the Stars kind of grind you down, they are built for the best of seven, right? They have one of the most consistent lineups you've seen. Like, it's not one star. I mean, Wyatt Johnson certainly is emerging as a potential star, but they have different ages, different strengths, like all these people down the lineup that anybody can withstand a seven game series. So I like the Stars coming out of this, especially if the Avalanche keep testing fate. Like, it's fun to watch, that's for certain, but at the same time, they gotta show up on time. Like, geez.
They also have the best name in the playoffs, I think, in Logan Stankoven, this rookie who's just amazing. But love the name. Stankoven.
Stanky. Yeah, that's his hockey.
That's his nickname. That's what he likes to be called. They asked him, and he said that.
Oh, I love it. You know, this kind of feels like Florida and Boston as far as the rest versus rust situation, you know, because Colorado's coming off their five-game series with the Jets, so they are pretty much rested. And then you got Dallas coming off of Vegas. They won seven games. Like, could you see this being a similar situation as the Bruins and Panthers series?
I never know. This is like such a talking point, right? But I want to see the data on it because I never know what is the actual advantage. Like, I do know Swayman's comments that he just wanted to keep playing are indicative of rest being a detriment. But at the same time, I've talked to the Hurricanes trainer, Bill Bernstein. He's a great guy. He is one of the best trainers in the league. And he says at this day and age, with the technology they have to have physical like battles on the ice when you're like sweeping a team, right? And when you're at practice, there's no excuse for rest, like rest being an issue, but a rust or rest, like this
excuses
me. What do you guys think about this? Because I genuinely can't decide which one I'd rather be.
Well, no, game one for Florida, I mean, they came out, I mean, the first half of the first period was great for them, but the rest of the game just did not live up to standards. Of course, that may have been a lineup issue that
the lines were a little messed up, the way that they switched up the lines at the end of the Tampa series, because Tampa put the point Kucherov, Stamkos all in one line, and Maurice rolled with that. Now they might get Bennett back. It's been a very fluid situation with the lines the last few games for the Panthers, but they did get them back together for game two, and we saw what happened there.
Maurice should call his old friend Brindamore and tell him to switch up the lines himself. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll listen.
So, Sarah, looking at the last series we haven't talked about, Edmonton-Vancouver, when I was kind of thinking about this before our interview, thinking about what I wanted to ask you about it, I have a question for you regarding the Edmonton Oilers, just their playoff insuccess that I was thinking about over the last few years. Who do you think the best defenseman to play for the Edmonton Oilers over the last decade has been?
Oh, man. What a question. I like Ekholm. That's recency bias, but I think his impact on the lineup has been palpable, especially when they haven't had good goaltending whatsoever, when in the past maybe they've had slightly better goaltending at times. Yeah. I don't know. Darnell Nurse, when he's cooking, but he has not cooked in several years.
He's burning his food, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Ekholm right now, and I think ask me after his playoff run, because he could have a good impact on the team.
It's just crazy to think, going back, you know, at least 10 years, as far as back as I went, just thinking about this Oilers team, that they're always like, you feel like they're right there, but they can't get over the hump. They've really, whether it's been an investment issue or just bad choices between defensemen and goalies, they just cannot get it right on the back end. And every year after year after year, it just keeps biting them in the ass.
Okay, I'm relieved that this was a trick question because I'm like, I can't think of a good.
No, not at all. The great fact that you threw a name out was impressive because I'm like going, I was like, Duncan Keith might be the name. And when he played for Edmonton, it was like a disaster.
Adam Lawson.
Like, Chris Pronger is probably the best defenseman they've had in the last 20 years. And even when he was there. So it's crazy to think that this team that's been so close for a while now has not built up that area of their game. Just blows my mind.
Brutal. And I mean, their collapse was just embarrassing. They were heavy favorites. I'm partial to the Canucks for some reason. I've just always loved the crazy fan base, but I was thrilled to see that type of comeback. And that's the kind of team the Canucks have been all year. Yeah. So I don't know. The Oilers look shook to me.
Oh man, that's it. The Canucks are going to end up winning.
That would be hilarious.
That would be hilarious, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
That would absolutely be hilarious. Sarah Sivian from the Bleacher Report. We will get back with you on playoff fashion sometime near the end of the playoffs. Really appreciate you joining us. It was a great interview. Thank you for joining us.
Of course, anytime. See you guys later.
Take care, Sarah.
Since the dawn of mankind, we've cooked our food over an open flame and debated the best way to grill. One thing not up for debate, grilling and beer always go together. And not just any beer would do. Whether you barbecue Texas style or celebrate Wednesday with burgers and dogs, you need a beer that tastes great and is less filling, so you have more room for food. You need Miller Lite. As you guys may or may not know, I'm a pretty decent cook, especially behind the barbecue. So when I start the fire from my smoker on a hot day, really, the only thing that I have to worry about is what wood I'm going to use. The easiest decision for me is what I'll be drinking. That's a nice ice cold can of Miller Lite. Oh, and by the way, here's a pro tip. It really goes well with brisket. Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality and tastes as great as your barbecue. A perfect companion for grill masters across America. With the Miller Lite in hand, grilling doesn't just taste great, it tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right at your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.